and welcome to minute 59 of season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we foobar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today from the Star Wars Minute is Alex Robinson. Welcome back, Alex.
Hey, glad to be here.
And glad to have you back. Glad that you're able to make it for yet another day on this show. So much appreciated. Yeah, thank you very much.
I believe I agreed to a 5-episode tour of duty, so I'm happy to serve my podcasting nation this way.
Yeah, just watch where you sit.
Okay.
I think that's like the theme of this minute. Watch where you sit. So minute 59 begins with Hill fiddling with his boot and ends with Hill picking himself up out from danger. So yesterday we had a very lacking episode. Yes.
Yeah.
Yesterday we had a very, laid back type of minute. The guys are just walking across the town, hey, watch out for those snipers. Don't worry about it. Flash. Thunder, things like that. And, Hill decides to, get rid of his little hitchhiking rock in his boot. And somehow, we'll have to try and discuss how this actually happens. But a beam that he sits on happens to hit the brick wall behind him and just basically topples the wall, as many times as I've seen this movie, I still don't know if I want to believe that something like that could happen or not. Like, how fragile is the wall of this building? If this was your house, all you have to do is lean a little piece of wood on it, and the whole thing is just going to come tumbling down like the domino effect.
Well, and also it's sturdy enough where it's weak enough where just that little push is able to knock the whole thing down, but yet it is, still thick enough where the soldiers on one side are completely oblivious to the fact there's another group on the other side there, and they're all just talking and stuff. It's not like they're all being, quiet. Both sides seem like they're kind of, surprised, and so that seems to stretch credulity to me that, that there could be that many people on both sides of that thing and not be aware of the other one, hear them or, hear motions and things like that. But this is one of the gags that I was talking about yesterday. It's just such a funny thing to something now. It's like out of a silent movie, suddenly right. Seeing all these guys there.
Right. I mean, again, when you're watching this movie, it's effective from the perspective that, okay, here we're going to, get these two groups of men to have to face off against one another. Surprisingly, I mean, it's a very surprising moment. You're not expecting something like this to happen, possibly because it's possible. But when you're watching the movie normally, you're not going to pay attention to that, like we are trying to do now by saying, okay, I'd like to believe that it doesn't matter how many bombing raids happen on this in this little Normandy town, either it would be destroying the air, the bricks or not. It's not in between, because here it's just weakened, the bricks, which seems a little strange, and I don't think the rain is going to have an effect on that either. And if it is, then I think you might have a case to sue the contractor who built your house.
Oh man, there must have been so many lawsuits after the war ended of people saying, oh, the house wasn't up to paperwork.
Come on, think about this. You have your kids playing outside and someone throws the ball against the wall and the wall just comes tumbling down.
Yeah. The only one who wins at war are lawyers.
That's probably true. It's probably true.
But yes, this is our first big combat scene for the week. Well, first they have to start screaming at each other. I don't know if you can call it a combat scene.
That's right. And again, it goes back to the fact that you have the Americans screaming in English, obviously, so we can actually understand what they're saying. And the Germans just rattling off in German, which I have absolutely no idea what any of them are saying. So I'm just going to quickly go through all of the different comments that are screamed. I didn't even take the time to try and figure out which character is saying which of them, because I don't think it really makes a difference because of all the chaos that's going on right now. So you have drop your weapons, drop your weapons, drop
them. One guy who seems like he's trying to translate. That's the only difference, it seems like.
Okay, right. We'll get to up them in a second. Yeah. Okay, drop your weapons, drop your weapons, drop them now, drop your fucking weapons. I'll shoot you, drop them now, put them down. You know, it's like the and then, you know, they show us the German guys screaming back, and you see like the spittle coming out of their mouth with the way that they're screaming back and stuff like that. So do you think this is an effective Mexican standoff? Would you call this a Mexican standoff?
I don't know if you're allowed to call it that anymore generally. B, I wouldn't rank it high in the rankings of Mexican standoffs we've seen in film, because we don't really get a sense, there's not really much sense of personalization about who the bad guys are, you know what I mean?
Right. Okay. Is there a more PC version of the term I don't know the answer to this. I'm asking if there is.
I really don't know the answer, but I assume anything that has a ethnicity specified in its thing, you're not allowed to say it anymore. So, can we just call it a friendship standoff?
I don't know if friendship is the right word for that, but okay. We'll just call it a standoff. How's that?
Standoff. A non-national standoff. As friendship standoffs go, I don't feel like this one is particularly strong. Do you disagree? Do you think it's a good one?
Most friendship standoffs in movies have a lot of tension, but not chaos. And yeah, I think that's one. Why this one doesn't work as well. This is a little too chaotic to be very high on my list. It would be on my list, but it wouldn't be as high on my list. Like, what would some of your favorite movie friendship standoffs be?
I mean, I guess the first one thing I thought of are like from the like the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and that kind of those kind of mm-hmm. you know those iconic ones. I don't know. I mean. I wouldn't say Han Solo and Greedo are a Mexican standoff exactly. It doesn't seem to be the same parameters, but
that's a Corellian standoff.
That you're allowed to say. I feel like it's a matter. I feel like ideally you'd want both of the on either side. You want to know something about both of those characters. You know what I mean? So you know kind of you have some sense of what they're capable of or how angry they are or what, as opposed to just. Oh, here's a random bad guy, you know.
Right. But okay, everyone knows that Tarantino loves the the friendship standoffs.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's off the top of my head there are three of his movies that have these type of standoffs in them. I mean, you have the one in Inglourious Basterds, you know, down in the basement, which always shocks me, but with the way that it is executed, pun intended. Then obviously you have the one in Pulp Fiction in the diner, which is also considered a friendship standoff, as you like to refer to it. And then my favorite one is definitely Reservoir Dogs. You know, at the very end, where you have a
three-way Mexican, three-way friendship.
That's right.
So yeah,
that's right. And then as a bonus, Tarantino, it's True Romance. Have you ever seen True Romance with Christian Slater and Patricia Arquette? Right. So that one they have in the hotel room, which is also a great one, because that one there's so many people involved. You know, it's not just two guys, facing off one another. So how far back do you think this reference goes to the formerly known as Mexican standoff, which we're now calling friendship standoff? How far back do you think this idea goes?
Well, it's got to be a movie thing. not this got to be, but my suspicion is that it's a movie thing. So I'm going to say the ones of the 1940s.
Well, it is not from a movie. It actually came from the Mexican-American War, which in the 19th century. And there's even a short story that was written in 1876 that that one of the characters says, we will call it a standoff, a Mexican standoff. You lose your money, but you save your life. Okay. So I you know, okay, that's basically it's you know, most of the time you have guns involved in it because you know, I don't think it would work as well with swords or even lightsabers.
Yeah.
And the obviously it's something that's used much in movies, you know. So so I can understand why you would have suspected that it really is a movie trope. I mean, well, this is a movie trope that the idea came from the the movies. Obviously, one of the very first ones to feature it is the movie that you mentioned earlier, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Huh.
You know, where you have the three main characters
earlier. Yeah.
That's one of the most famous ones. And it's been copied quite often because of it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that there weren't any movies beforehand, but they just weren't they weren't considered as powerful, I guess you can say.
Yeah.
With the whole thing. I mean, the one in Pulp Fiction I like because it's subtle, and it, you know, it allows Tarantino to use his great dialogue for these type of things. You know, because they're sitting in a cafe. You know, it's not like in Reservoir Dogs where, you know, they're facing off against one another, each holding guns or whatever. Here it's okay, we're in a cafe. Yeah, and if you shoot me, he's going to shoot you, that type of thing. You know, and you know, the idea of trying to you know, keep things a little calmer, make things calmer, that type of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah. Okay. So I like the idea of that. And again, we have, you know, all the shouting going on, and in the middle of it we see, you know, a quick little shot of Upham, who's trying to calm things down. But no matter what, he's stammering in German, and he's supposed to be this expert translator, but he doesn't seem to be as effective as a translator as one might think.
Well, in this scene, I mean, no one probably can even hear what he's saying, you know?
Well, that's true also. He's not able to project his voice well enough, I guess. But still, he's,
I mean, still in that situation, I mean, you know, everyone's screaming. He'd have to run right in the middle of everyone and be putting his hands out, being like, stop, stop, stop. Right. You know what I mean? But
exactly.
He's not that heroic. Yeah.
And then I just love how right in the middle of this minute, because it happens at the second 33, they give us a shot of these Germans just screaming at the Americans. And then, you know, their torsos start exploding with all these little blood packets. You know, you see all this blood just flying all over the place as they're all being shot.
Yeah.
And again, remember when I first saw this, it's a very shocking scene because here we were, you know, shocked that these two groups of men are that close to one another and, you know, they're screaming at each other, and then they give us a double shock right after that. You know, another dose of a shock. We're saying, okay, now we're going to kill all these men. You know, it's just done really, really well. I mean, very graphic.
Right.
There's, you know, as they do in this movie, whenever there are characters that are blown up, that are shot, whatever it is, there's splatter all over the place of blood going in all the directions. Again, it goes back to the idea of a lot of chaos here also. And they leave just one of the German soldiers, you know, sitting on the edge of a table, basically. But you can clearly see that he is no longer breathing because, you know, his head is down. I don't understand how a body would be able to stay upright that way. It's a little strange, but, you know, I'm not an expert on what dead bodies do. I try to avoid that.
Well, luckily I am, and I will tell you that I don't know. I couldn't. But this whole scene was very weird to me, and it goes back to about how much of an anti-war film is it? Because I was really surprised all throughout the movie. I was surprised that there's very little attempt to humanize the Germans, a little bit, but for the most part, the Germans appear as kind of like off. Like you very rarely see them, like things from their point of view. And you very rarely see a sympathetic face of a scared German in the film.
Right. Okay. I mean, again, we do see stuff from their perspective, but it's a very general perspective. Meaning, during the first few weeks of this season, where we were going through, the Normandy scenes. Quite often they would show us the viewpoint of the Germans, but we wouldn't see the Germans themselves.
Right, or you just see like a shadowy helmet or something like that. And
exactly.
And I'm really surprised because I feel like typically with an anti-war movie, part of what you would be doing is humanizing the enemy and saying like, look, the guys on the other side are just as scared and don't want to die as much as you do. But like whenever you see the Germans in these shots, they look like they are out for blood and savages and, like spittle flying and, like they look, inhuman in the scene
right.
And the gunfire breaks out and it's so totally like, oh, good. No one on our side got hurt. All those guys died instantly with very little suffering and it's like as soon as it happens, it's like they might as well not even be there. There's not like, oh, here we are now standing among a pile of 15 humans. We just executed, you know what I mean? Just kind of like, okay,
right.
Moving on from that thing. And so it's very exciting, but I can see people's point about it. Like, well, that's, undermines it being an anti-war thing is by kind of downplaying a lot of that the
right. Okay.
So,
I can see that. And then I see what you're saying about that. Yeah. 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 And again, from a filmmaking perspective, this is just amazingly done. The idea again of surprising us that this is happening and then, it's just being completely obliterated because nobody happened to notice that there are two guys or three guys standing up on top. That's what it comes down to. And then they give us a shot of these guys on top and we see that their guns are still smoking from all the bullets they've just used to destroy all these Germans, down below. And then, one of the guys screams, "Clear up!"
Oh,
and then
it took me out of the movie when he said that.
And then we see the guys on the ground. We see Upham. Now, what surprises me is we never saw any of these guys drop to the ground. The bullets start flying, and then the next thing all these guys are on the ground. But what gave them the information that it's only their side that's shooting at these Germans, as opposed to I have to shoot back, which again, none of them shoot. So it's very, very strange.
It's a very peculiar sequence in that sense. Yes. None of the Americans, I don't think, that get any kind of suffer any kind of damage from the fact and the one thing you see is a wave that's in the next minute. So never mind. I'll save that for after the reaction afterwards. So
right. And I mean, again, Upham is crawling on the ground, and then we see Ryben crawling on the ground, and then then we see Mellish also, and Mellish goes and then once again the guy up on top goes clear up. And then, back to Hill, Paul Giamatti. And, he also is on the ground. And, he's at his hands even over his helmet, trying to keep himself as protected as possible, which, again, I don't know how he did that if he was, sitting on the beam that fell. He would have fallen on his butt at this point. He should be crouched down in the way that he is. He should be sprawled out on the ground. That's what he should be.
You think he remembers this as like, oh, what a Charlie Brown moment that was. Like, I'm the one who said, I guess they would have discovered each other eventually. So better to do one clean sweep than it is to, have them suddenly realize, well, we're caught off guard,
Yeah. It's a very good question. I don't know the answer to that. And then, he takes off his hat, his helmet. Which is very funny, because you'd think that at this point he wants to still keep his helmet on if they're if because do they know? This goes back to the same question that we asked earlier this week. How do they not know that there isn't another room on the other side filled with Germans?
Yeah,
We
they
didn't.
get like, okay, now let's really make sure it's clear before we
That's right.
start relaxing. And
Exactly.
no sitting on any beaches
And
either, Giamatti.
that's right. And then he puts his hand up and screams, "Clear down!" And then he
Again,
like stands up
totally ruining the
and
movie.
tries to lift himself up. tries to steady himself as the men are still running amok all around. It's done in a very, very interesting way. I like the way that they do this. Even though it seems a little out of place, but it still works.
Yeah.
That's all I have for this minute. Did you have anything else you wanted to discuss?
Nope, that about covers it for me.
All
Let's get
right.
to the trivia.
Great. So every Thursday we have a game for my guests, which is called Say What Thursday. Say what? Say
Say
what
what
again?
Thursday?
Say what? Say what again? I dare you. I double dare you. Say what? So the idea behind this is I'm going to give you a quote that one of the actors in this movie makes in a role that they have portrayed over their careers. Okay, but in order to, I'm going to
Okay.
tell you the quote, and I'm going to tell you the year the movie came out, and you have to try and guess who the actor is and what movie it is. Now, obviously, as we've discussed numerous times this
Oh
week,
boy.
there are far too many actors that I could use for this type of thing. So I chose three actors for every one of for you know for every one of my guests that it could be. So your choices are it could be
Okay.
Tom Hanks, Nathan Fillion, or Matt
Okay.
Damon. Those are the three people that you have to focus on. Okay. Your
Oh.
quotes will be from
Oh
them.
boy. He's needing none of them. Okay.
None of
None of
them.
them I'm expert on, but go ahead.
There was absolutely not. I couldn't find a single character in this movie or a single actor in this movie who's also been in the Star Wars universe. So I couldn't do that. So I apologize from that perspective. I was really hoping that there would be one, but I didn't find one. Is there anybody that there is that you think I might have forgotten about? Because I don't think Harrison Ford is in this movie.
I'd have to check. I'd have to look at the IMDb to see the complete lineup of who's in it. But that's like I'll do that in between episodes, and I'll get back to you on that one for next week.
Okay, tomorrow, tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow. It feels like next week.
It will, it
Go ahead.
will. Yes, that's true. Remember that you do the Godfather Minute every week. This we do every day.
Yeah, that's true. I'm not used to do this daily format. Oh my gosh, it's my head's spinning.
Seriously.
All right.
What's 12 seasons of doing
Let's hear
that?
the
Come on. All right. Do you
trivia.
think of yourself as a person who is good at this type of trivia, like thinking of quotes of actors or characters in movies? If it's not Star Wars.
Well, I don't want to say yes because if I say yes then and I do poorly, then I'm going to look like a real dork. So I'm going to say no. In fact, I've seen so few movies that I don't even recognize any of the names you just told me. So I'm totally just going to be guessing at it. So
Okay,
go
all
ahead.
right.
Be gentle on an old
I will
man.
do my best. I'll do my best. All right. So the
All right.
first one is from a movie from 1995. Okay, remember it could be Matt Damon,
Okay.
Nathan Fillion, or Tom Hanks. Okay, and
Okay.
the quote is, "Gentlemen, it's been a privilege flying with you."
1995, it's been a privilege flying with you. My chances are Matt Damon, Nathan Fillion, and Tom Hanks. I'm going to say Apollo 13.
Ooh, see, there you go. You're doing well.
I feel like you gave me an easy one.
You did well.
Go ahead.
All right. The next one from 2005.
Okay.
It ain't all buttons and charts, little albatross. You know what the first rule of flying is? Well, I suppose you do, since you already know what I'm about to say.
Is this all movies, or is it television programs as well?
It's movies. Definitely. Only movies.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know of a single movie that Nathan
Fillion has been. What TV show did you think it was?
Well, Nathan Fillion, I assume that there would be a Firefox quote in there. But what's that show called?
First of all, it's called Firefly. Firefox is Clint Eastwood stealing. There you go.
But no, I can't. I couldn't name a single Nathan Fillion movie. So anyway, what was the
quote? The quote is, "It ain't all buttons and charts, little albatross. You know what the first rule of flying is? Well, I suppose you do, since you already know what I'm about to say."
I'm going to say Nathan Fillion in the second Pink Panther film.
Is he in the second Pink Panther film? That I don't know. Well, you are right. It's Nathan Fillion, and you were on the right track before, because it is the movie that they made Serenity.
I can't believe I didn't guess. Oh my gosh!
But
that was probably going to be the only Nathan Fillion movie on there too, and it's the only one that I would recognize as the Nathan Fillion movie.
Okay, that's fair. All right. Here's the next one from 1999. I think it's right, time. It's time you learned the true meaning of playtime.
1999, true meaning of playtime. That could be Toy Story. A lot of playing in that. Someone could be teaching another. Woody could be teaching another toy. But he already did a Tom Hanks. So would you give me another Tom Hanks without giving me a Matt Damon in the mix? I'm going to say Tom Hanks, Toy Story. Two.
Very good. 1999. Excellent. There you go. Well, think about it this way. There's only five. You're only getting five today. So, you know, you're going to have duplicates somewhere of the
actor. Law of averages says this one has to be a Matt Damon one.
You do realize that. There is that possibility, too.
Okay. We'll see. And also, I don't, you know, Matt Damon's very spotty for me. So even knowing Matt Damon, I might not be able to pull.
All right. Okay. Next one from 1994. Now, for some reason, I fit in the army like one of them round pegs. It's not really hard. You just make your bed really neat and remember to stand up straight and always answer every question with yes, drill sergeant.
Oh, my goodness. 94.
Nathan Fillion, Tom Hanks, or Matt Damon?
Well, I just going on about how I thought it was going to be Matt Damon. But I don't remember when Matt Damon
Big is Tom Hanks.
As we just established, it was around this. Wait a minute. Got me. We established earlier in the week that Matt Damon became famous around this time, because when they filmed this, he wasn't famous, but then he became famous. So if it was Matt Damon, it would be very early on. But I couldn't. I don't know what movie it would be. So I will say.
Do you want the quote again?
Matt Damon. The army made me into a little person, a little soldier, something like that, right? I fit in here like a little soldier.
I fit in here like one of them round pegs.
Round pegs. Is that what he says? Okay. I will say Matt Damon in How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying.
No, it is not Matt Damon. Okay.
Oh, who is it?
Well, you can keep trying to guess, and then you have to guess what movie it's from. So I will give you the quote once again.
It was Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks in Forrest Gump.
That is correct. Oh, you see, you were just playing with me there. You knew that, I guess.
No, I thought you were trying to trick me with a deep cut one, but then when you're like, oh, you have to keep guessing. I'm like, he wouldn't give me something. He wouldn't make it be like that Damon's College movie he did. So then
not for you. There are guests that I would do that for, but not you, Alex.
Okay, good, yeah. Good. All right, wait, one more.
Yeah, one more for you. Okay, from 1998. Okay.
98.
Picture a girl who took a nosedive from the ugly tree and hit every branch on the way down.
That would be Matt Damon in that movie he did with Kevin Smith about the angels coming down. What was that called? Do you remember? Obviously, you know.
You're talking about Dogma, but it's not Dogma. No.
Dogma, okay. Right. Is it a Matt Damon film?
It is a Matt Damon film, yes. Matt Damon does appear in the film. Yes.
And what year is it again?
1998.
That's not going to help. That's not going to help me. I couldn't. Is it Matt Damon in the Talented Mr. Ripley?
No, that's 1999.
Okay. I give up. It's Matt Damon.
Picture a girl who took a nosedive from the ugly tree and hit every branch on the way down.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to give you a hint. Nathan Fillion is also in this same movie.
Again, I've not told you. I can't name another Nathan Fillion movie. Is it that movie? What was that movie where he played a...
Okay, I'm going to give you another hint. Tom Hanks is also in this movie. So it's a quote from Matt Damon in a movie that both Tom Hanks and Nathan Fillion also appear in. From 1998.
This is not helping me. I'm gonna. Is it Toy Story 3?
In 1998, Toy Story 3 came out before Toy Story 2.
Is it Toy Story 2?
No.
Is it Toy Story? I don't know. I give up. What is it? Come on. Let me off the hook here. It's a little time sake.
Well, what movie are we discussing this week?
Saving Private Ryan. Is that what it is? Oh, yes. Man. That's embarrassing. Well, you got me. No, you got me. You got me. I mean, it's fair and square. I can't deny it. We'll keep it live.
I was trying to be easy on you on that one. but I guess since you didn't watch the movie before, you only saw segments, you didn't see the segment where he was talking about it's when he's talking about the fact that he and his brothers were in the barn, right before they shipped out.
Okay. Well.
All right.
I said that.
Sorry. Yeah, you did very well.
Thank you.
That you did very well.
That's somewhat appreciated.
All right. No, you got close on you got three for sure, and one of them very close with the Serenity Fire.
You don't have to prop me up.
I'm not trying to prop you up. I'm
the Serenity one did burn. Yeah, I forgot they even did a move.
Okay, got it. All right, so Alex, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Alex Robinson?
Star Wars Minute is the name of my podcast that I co-host with my friend Pete the Retailer. It's exactly like what Movie Rob is doing here, except we've done it about all of the theatrically released Star Wars movies, except for the Clone Wars movie. So if hearing some nerds go through analyzing, scrutinizing, and celebrating 2 weeks of pod racing sounds just like what you want to hear, make sure you check out our coverage of The Phantom Menace at StarWarsMinute.com or wherever you download podcasts.
2 weeks of pod racing is not so bad. I did 5 weeks of crawling on a beach.
Wow. Yeah, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't even have like actors you recognize in it and stuff. It's still have no name.
That's right.
No name. Oh, boy.
The characters don't even have names. Forget about that. With the pod racing, you at least have all the names. Yeah, you didn't do the extended version of the pod race?
No, we did not. Luckily, we did. As our rule, we didn't do any of the special editions on our things. So the original theatrical cut was shorter than. Mm-hmm. Did not have cut out one lap of the pod race.
Right. Okay. Makes sense. All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, Alex, I hope you're interested in coming back again tomorrow, when you'll be able to tell us if any of the actors in this movie also appear somewhere in the Star Wars franchise.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
So, until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn it. My solitude.